Welcome to episode 44 of the Pirate Monk Podcast.
44.
I'm Nate Larkin, your host.
Nate Larkin.
Here with superb engineer Mondo Grimes.
Mondo Grimes.
And
the echo.
And in the room, the echo not coming by virtue of electronic delay. But just because he's a half step slower than the rest of us, Aaron Porter. What happened to Studio B?
Studio B is taking a rest. It's doing some stretching exercises, Pilates, getting in shape.
Yeah.
For now, Studio A seems like it's enough.
So Aaron Porter, if you haven't figured it out, Aaron Porter has actually made the pilgrimage from San Luis Obispo, California, to the New Jerusalem, Franklin, Tennessee. He's sitting with us here in Studio A, high above the Mellow Mushroom. And he has brought his dad with him.
Yeah, because Mondo brought his mom, and I thought...
I sure did, yeah.
I don't really left out of that, so...
Hi, Ernie. It's great to have you with us.
Hi, where am I?
You're in the New Jerusalem, evidently.
Now, I first met Ernie 5 years ago. When did we make the big trip to San Luis? Maybe your dad drove the van.
6 years ago.
Five or six years ago.
Gosh.
Yeah. And met your mom at that time. I got to hang out at the Porter house. So tell us, you got a father son adventure going on here. What's happening?
Yeah, you know what? This was just a good time, a chance to come, and we knew a house where we could stay for free while we home base to do some adventures.
Ah.
I don't want to tell anybody else where that house is because they might start calling and so I'll be nice. And so we have just been driving and driving through, boy, from, we've hit three states. We're just having adventures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you guys, it's so good to have you here in town, and Allie and I have just had a blast hanging out with you. And I got to give you the 50-cent tour of Nashville, and then last night we did Third Avenue and the whole tourist thing. That was fun.
Yeah, we were honky-tonking.
But meanwhile, you've gone off on some adventures of your own, took a road trip. Tell us about that. Where did you go after you landed here?
Well, after we got the dime tour, mm-hmm, of Nashville, we headed up to the Manhattan Project in Oak Ridge. This was one of our destinations. Interesting to my father on paper. Had to see it in person. Explain a little, because I don't know. This is where they made uranium, right?
Yeah, it developed fueling the atomic bombs for World War II.
Oh.
Incredible. And it's still rather secretive there.
Yeah. We tried to sneak around and actually feel good about the fact that we failed because they still make plutonium there. It's like a whole secret city back in the day.
Wow.
And so if we had succeeded, I actually would have felt worse about the national security.
Okay.
But as it is, people act creepy, and it's like you go into an X-Files episode. So, went there, then headed through the Smoky Mountains.
You saw Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg?
Oh, right. We cannot forget.
I won't even know how to describe that to my wife when I get home.
Yeah, I mean, tacky is the only word that comes to mind,
really?
But in a beautiful way.
I hear you can buy a t-shirt there.
I bought two last time. Nate and Allie gave me the tour of Gatlinburg, and I just love that you can buy a Christian t-shirt in the bong shop. You know, it's always nice that you can buy your cannabis paraphernalia on one side and your Christian crap on the other.
Yeah.
So it's that's Gatlinburg right there in a nutshell. How was that for a description?
God bless them. Yes. Okay.
So we came out the other side and went to... We kept looking at the map like, hey, look, here's this Cherokee place. We hung out in the Cherokee reservation, then looked at the map and said, look, Atlanta's not that far. So we drove down to Atlanta. And look, Montgomery's not that far from here. Let's go to Montgomery. So because we went in like little bits, it felt like it wasn't that far until we'd just driven straight for 3 days.
Yeah.
So now we're exhausted and sleeping. It just hanging out in your house, taking up room now.
Oh, wow. And you've been laboring today on dinner. I'm thrilled about this. You're cooking dinner for us.
Love cooking dinner.
And what do you got on the menu?
We're going to have carnitas tacos with some homemade pico de gallo, some homemade guacamole. We're going to take that carnitas and make some Cubano sandwiches with roasted jalapenos and Gruyere cheese and a little homemade tortilla chicken soup.
Oh, my.
Yes. You are in for a treat, my friend.
Yeah, let's hurry up and finish this podcast so we can go home and get some dinner. All right. Well, we will be right back on the Pirate Monk podcast.
Pirate Monk podcast.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me. We pillage, we plunder, we rifle, and loot. Drink up, me hearty's yo ho. We kidnap and drag each and don't give a hoot. Drink up, me hearty's yo ho. Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me.
Welcome back, pirate monks and our fellow chick monks of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Don't we have chick monks?
We do. We have actually quite a healthy group of chick monks.
Yeah, the chick monks.
Yeah.
So,
well, there goes our feminist contingency. See, I make fun of...
that's how they named themselves.
I make fun of the Midwest crowd, and you're afraid of that. Well, you just lost my Berkeley crowd right there. Jeez.
Well, awesome. So, now, we have a lot going on with the 48 Hours of Frankness. What's going on with
that? I can tell you what. Those weekends are revving up. Rob Brown and his gang of ruffians over there plotting these great weekend retreats. There'll be, I think, 10 of them happening just with Rob and his group around the country next year, plus other local Samson meetings are holding their 48 Hours of Frankness weekends.
Now, we just had one, right?
Yeah. These guys did one out in Knoxville last weekend. I've been getting reports all day. Actually, the phone call started about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon as 48 Hours ended, and I've heard nothing but stupendous reports about the weekend. Powerful, powerful weekend. And Rob handed off leadership of the weekend to a couple of guys who he had trained. Lee and Larry, from all reports, did a fantastic job of facilitating this one. Rob was present, but didn't really feel like he even needed to be there. Guys drove from several states to attend. There were a couple of pastors there. Sounds like it was another life-changing experience for quite a number of guys.
It sounds like old Rob was leading from the middle.
Yeah!
That's what it sounds like. Sounds like he was delegating a little bit.
That's awesome.
To some gifted fellas.
Now, though, you haven't heard that yet, because it's coming in a later segment.
That's a little forecast, though.
That was prophetic.
Yeah, it's a little prophetic word right there.
So stay tuned to find out what I'm leading in the middle means.
And what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Now, we got a special 48 Hours of Frankness coming up, and it's so special that I'm even going to go to it.
Because you're so special.
Well, I can't go to all of them. I have to pick which ones I'm going to go to.
I'm gonna foreshadow word. It's going to be self-aggrandizing.
It's not special because I'm going to be there.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to be there because it's special. You didn't hear me. That's what I said.
Sorry.
It will be equally special, maybe even more special, if for some reason I don't attend.
Yeah, you broke
but I intend to attend.
All right, here it is. And I think I want every guy to help us with this.
Okay.
Because this is really we had a beta version of this, but this is the first official Pastor's 48 Hours of Frankness. Now, this is hard for pastors to do because pastors, we're going to get into this for the rest of this episode. We're going to be talking about pastors and a ministry that's trying to help pastors come out of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
This is very hard for them. But boy, the pastors that went to our first weekend, it's been so great for them. So we're going down to the Los Angeles area in the San Bernardino Mountains. We're going to go up to the snow and have a 48 Hours of Frankness just for full-time ministers so that they can feel safe, that they're, this isn't around their congregations where they feel like they have to shine up anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just praying that we get a good group of pastors And we can fly in from anywhere because we're close enough to airports that guys, right. I'm hoping, will come from all over. We found a camp that would do it cheap, so it's only $120 for the whole weekend. And that includes Nate and I will be there leading it, and Scott Dente from Out of the Gray is going to be doing the music. And if you don't know who he is, look back about five episodes. He and his wife Christine were here. So Scott's going to be up there leading worship. It is going to be amazing. And we're even modifying it a little bit just for pastors. So if you aren't a pastor but you care about your pastor, then you tell your pastor. Here's what you tell your pastor. Pastor, if you will consider going to this, the guys that run this podcast will send you a book for free.
Oh, that's a good idea.
We will send any pastor Samson the Pirate Monk for free, so they can understand what this is about. And then we'll get them the information. It's January 24th through the 26th up in Running Springs, up in the Lake Arrowhead area. January 24th through the 26th.
That's a Monday through a Wednesday.
And I'll tell
you
right...
Starts on Monday afternoon.
Yes, Monday through Wednesday.
Yes.
So pastors are done with their weekend thing. They could fly out Monday morning if they need to fly. If they're in that area, they can just drive up. And it's done by Wednesday afternoon, so if they are in the L.A. area, they can still make it back for their Wednesday night stuff if they need to rush around.
Okay.
But I'll tell you right now, they're one of our pastor pirates in our local San Luis Obispo area became a pastor pirate because a layperson in his church gave him the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought him into community.
Right.
So I don't think a lot of folks understand how much influence, positive influence, they can have on their pastors if they say, this is what I'm discovering, and man, I want this for you.
Yeah.
Because don't assume your pastor has it. Most pastors do not have it. Mm. And what a gift to encourage them and tell them, we will get him a book because we want him there.
Yeah.
January 24th to the 26th, $120, San Bernardino Mountains.
It's going to be a great, great time. I'm very much looking forward to being there.
And we're going to take a break and come back and talk more about pastors here on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Pirate Monk Podcast. Echoing myself this morning.
Bobby's got a Duster, 79, a bottle of Jack, and a 45. Points it at his head and he starts to cry, too proud to ask me to save his life. Billy's in a limo on the Upper East Side, playing Russian roulette with the long white line. His wife gets a call at 3 a.m. saying Billy ain't never coming home again. She asked me why, and I said, I sure wish you'd believe that everybody's free, and I'll help you if you ask me to.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We're on the phone now with the staff of a great ministry based out of Florida called Care for Pastors. The founder's with us, Pastor Ron Cook. He and his wife, Rodetta, are the co-founders of the ministry. The executive director of the ministry, Dick Wynn, is on the phone as well, as is Don Baher, the director of development. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hi, how are you today?
Doing well.
Glad to have you with us. Yeah,
thanks for joining us.
Good to have you on.
Ron, now you had a story of a life in pastoral ministry. Now you and your wife felt called to this ministry. Can you tell us a little of your own story and what led to the birth of Care for Pastors?
Sure, be glad to, Nate. My wife and I have been involved in ministry full-time for 30-plus years. Went through a time after pastoring two small churches in West Virginia for 9 years that we were ready just to be one of those statistics of walking away from ministry.
Mm.
got involved in single adult ministry in Lynchburg, Virginia, and God used that as a healing tool. And some 18 years ago, God birthed in our heart this ministry of care for pastors. Didn't know exactly how and when or what it would look like, but some 18 years ago, that was birthed. And so we have, it's germinated. It's gone from what could be to what should be to now what must be. Mm. And we are just absolutely committed to passionately coming alongside of God's servants and giving them a safe place to turn.
Yeah.
Now, can you, I'm just thinking, our audience out there, for the most part, not in full-time ministry. So you talked about pastoring two small churches and coming to the place that you were going to become a statistic. How would you explain that to a person who is not in full-time ministry? What is that?
Okay. Well, I guess I could explain it best by one of our first business meetings. One of the deacons stood up in that business meeting and said, "Preacher, the problem with you is you don't have enough stripes on your back, and it's up to us to put some on you."
Mm.
I was 25.
Give me his address right now. Right now.
And as we're involved, have been involved in ministry and coming alongside of pastors and their families, that's not a real uncommon occurrence.
Wow.
That some people just think it is their duty to keep pastors and their families in line, and they don't. It doesn't bother them how they do it.
Yeah, I have a short history in the ministry. I became one of the statistics myself. I was a pastor from 25 to 30. My dad always said that he was a pastor because he couldn't do anything else. And he said, the day you could do something else, you should do it. And I still remember the day I made the phone call to my father and said, I can do anything but this. I don't know who is the best person to direct this question to, but what are the statistics? How quickly are we losing men and women from the ministry here in the States? And do you have any idea what the statistics look like globally?
Don, why don't you share that?
I'll be happy to. Just to give it real quickly, today, 4 out of 10 pastors will be deciding whether they want to stay in the ministry. And by the end of the day, 52 will have decided that they don't, and they will leave, either voluntarily or involuntarily.
52 now, pastors will leave the ministry today?
52.
In America.
Now, if you roll those figures out, in a month you have 1,600, and if you roll them out to a year, you have almost 20,000 that will be leaving, or voluntarily or involuntarily leaving the ministry. Now, we do know that approximately 55% of those will eventually work themselves back into ministry. But you have 45% of those leaving that will never return. And Nate, you're one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So
that never returned.
Right.
So, Dick,
In the sense of a pulpit ministry.
Right,
at least.
Right, exactly.
So, Dick, you've had some mentor experience, we read. What is happening that here's all these zealous young people who go to seminary and are supposedly being prepared for what's to come, and then they leave at that rate? What's the gap between what they think they're getting into and what they experience? I mean, it seems like training and education is supposed to prepare you for what you actually experience, right? That's kind of the point.
Okay.
Understanding of God's word, it helps in the understanding of theology, it helps in the understanding of how to prepare a message, and that's basically the broad stroke categories of what you get when you go through a seminary education. But they're never taught leadership, they're never taught finances, they're never taught how to supervise staff, they're never taught how to select staff, how to develop staff, and that kind of thing. And so as a result of that, you need to come beside, especially the younger people, and that have a very little experience at this point, and begin to develop them through discipleship, through mentoring, through coaching, and to really help them understand some of their responsibilities to lead a church. Because today, in today's world, most pastors not only preach, but they have to lead a church. They have to lead a congregation. And we've kind of moved away a lot from lay leadership. And although I think there's some return to that, for which I'm very grateful, mm-hmm. but the whole expertise of what you have normally in a body is thrust on a pastor, and then he's in about his second or third board meeting, and they ask him to put a strategic plan together for the next year or the next 3 years. He's never done that. He doesn't know where to start. And so there's a lot of lack of training from the leadership side and the financial side in the training that is given to many pastors. So you got a strong businessman, and all at once he says this pastor doesn't, you know, he doesn't shape up or doesn't know these things that he needs to lead our church. And many times that causes frustration, and it's a point where they just don't feel he's qualified, but he's qualified in everything that he's been trained to do, and he just needs more training.
Well, I want to come back to that later, but I don't want to miss the chance for you to pick up, like, okay, now you've got these pastors who are moving towards just falling out of the ministry, so what do you do with them?
Yeah, The dominant feeling that I recall from my five largely miserable years in the ministry, I mean, there were parts of it I liked. I was trained for preaching. I was good at preaching. I excelled in the pulpit. But I was terrible at everything else. I also was in the middle of a personal moral struggle, which it would have been fatal for me to disclose to anybody. And so I remember being so isolated and lonely. It felt like the spotlight clicked on whenever I entered a room. I was expected to lead where meeting in which I was present. I was perched precariously on the top of a pedestal and told to stay there. And I knew I didn't belong there. And I was very, very lonely. And the isolation bred more insanity. I got crazier in the ministry simply because there was nobody I could safely talk to. Can you speak to that, the isolation that a pastor typically encounters in the ministry?
Ron, that's your cup of tea, I think.
I think Nate, that is one of the primary contributors is. You were convinced there was no safe place to turn.
Right.
And so it kept building and building and building until it brought you to a crisis situation. And if we can communicate to pastors, there is a safe place to turn that will take you where you are and work with you to help you become what God's called you to be. You know, part of our core values is, you know, we offer confidentiality, but not judgmental. And we will confront sin for what it is. But then we, you know, because we are that safe place to turn, let's look at what God has for you, mm-hmm. and let's move forward. You know, just speaking a secret to someone robs that secret of a tremendous amount of its power.
Yeah.
Most pastors are convinced, I have got to keep this secret. Mm-hmm. And the longer the secret, the more power it has over them. But once they speak that secret to someone they can trust, the secret starts to lose its power.
Right.
That doesn't automatically go away, but it loses part of its stronghold.
So how do pastors practically do this with you? I saw that. I mean, do they call in? What if there's a guy in South Dakota? You guys are in Florida. What's the practical service that you guys offer to these pastors?
From a practical standpoint?
Yeah, how does that work itself out?
Okay. Well, we can offer him phone counseling. If he has the ability to get here, we can offer him 2 weeks of intensive care.
Mm.
We can offer him accountability, but we don't want to exclude the wife.
Yeah.
Because so many times the wife is suffering even more than the husband.
Mm.
It's a pastoral care ministry, but it's a pastoral family care ministry. We don't want to exclude that wife. And many times, you know, we will spend time on the phone with a pastor's wife.
Ron, would this not be a good place for you to explain our levels of care?
Sure. Yeah, if that would be okay.
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. Level one is what we call preventative care. And on that level, it's like taking vitamins. We establish a relationship with them, that it's a trusted place to turn, where we offer mentoring and encouragement and building relationship, that if and when they get to that point that they feel like they just have no place to turn, that they do have a place to turn, and that's care for pastors. Under level one, we offer the phone counseling, the one-on-one if they're close by or can get here. We offer respite care. There are any number of places here in Central Florida that we've made arrangements that we can bring a pastor and his wife and provide them respite. Also, under level one, we're developing a Care for Pastors Leadership Institute. It just so happens that Dick has literally taught leadership principles around the world for decades, and we're going to be tapping into that, as well as some other advisory board directors. So level one is preventative care. Level two is emergency room or a walk-in clinic, where we offer more in-depth counseling, vocational, marital, personal, again, letting them know this is a confidential place to turn. Sometimes it can only be by phone. Other times we'll use Skype. And when we can, we will bring them here. We have one house available right now that we've been able to purchase and furnish, where we can bring them on site for a week or 2 weeks of intensive care for both the pastor and his wife. Level three is the level that we're currently developing, and that's the intensive care and the rehab, where we are developing a program to bring them here 3 to 6 months for intensive care. And during that time, just instead of putting a bullet to their head, offering them that intensive spiritual rehab and care to get them back in the work of ministry, maybe not at the level that they were, but not losing them for the kingdom building. So those are pretty much the three levels that we're looking at.
Boy, that's an important.
And along with that, developing care for churches, because sometimes it's not the church, it was the pastor that caused the problem, and developing a care for churches program also.
It's an important thing you said right there, that they might not come back in the same capacity that they were in. I think there's this kind of trajectory for most youth pastors that you're going to move to an associate pastor, you're going to move to a senior pastor, and there's, you know, you're supposed to achieve the highest rank. You're supposed to get to a 4-star general. And, boy, God hasn't built every pastor to be the senior pastor. God's built some people to have the kind of education that a pastor has, but then to be a lay pastor. And that's not a demotion. That's who God built them to be. So do you have to have some of those defining the relationship kind of conversations with pastors who are stuck in a rut with actually finding out how God's wired them to function within the church?
Absolutely. We certainly do. It takes hands, it takes fingers, it takes toes, it takes heads, it takes all the parts of the body, and they're all vitally important for the health and well-being. And it's just not the lead guy that's important in building God's kingdom. And we have to understand that.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break and come back with some more questions here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast here from Franklin, Tennessee. Nate, you've got a question for Dick.
Yeah, I do. Dick, you've got years and years of experience leadership. You're a past president of Youth for Christ USA. You worked with John Maxwell and his leadership development team for years, and now you're the executive director of Care for Pastors. I know you have a global view because of the work you've done in the past. How do you see this? Do you think that there is a crisis in pastoral ministry that extends beyond the borders of the United States? And if so, where do you see this organization going?
Well, it's definitely a global situation. The pastors are discouraged wherever they minister. Not everyone, of course, but many of them are. And they're looking for someone they can talk to. They need encouragement. I love the quote from Truett Cathy from Chick-fil-A. He says, you know how you can tell if a person needs encouragement? And his answer is, if they're breathing. And we all need encouragement.
Well, and that's from a lot of Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I thought you said, you know, Tolstoy, but okay, go ahead.
That's great. Okay.
So encouragement is one, because pastors do get discouraged, yeah. And many times it's a situation. I think one of the things that two of the major categories that Ron talks about is that create issues is number one, and I'll ask him to explain this in a few moments, but the contradictory vision. And the pastor has a vision, and the board or the congregation has another vision, and so there's contradiction in their vision, and that causes a lot of issues. And then the second one is passion fatigue. A pastor is called, he knows he's called, he believes he's supernaturally called, and as a result of that, he just works, and finally he runs out of gas, and he's so discouraged, he can't do anymore, but he's called, and so he just keeps at it as long as he can, but he's worn out, he's burned out, and to use a cliche, and as a result of that, he just keeps going. Now, that issue, both of those issues, are global. They're not local, they're not national, but they're global. And so what we hope to do in the near future is begin to identify some areas across the world, and we're not sure how quick we'll get to this. We have a lot to do in the United States. But we really believe that this whole concept will be developed globally. In the organizations that I've worked with in the past, we've always chosen five areas of the world to start on. It's North America, Europe, Africa, Latin America, and Asia Pacific. And we'll probably follow that pattern that many mission organizations do. And then to create someone in that area of the world that creates an area office for us, and then we'll begin to put regional people under it, and that will work in this ministry. But right now, we don't have that ability. So if we get a call from overseas or an email from overseas based on our website, what we do is try to tie them to a pastor that we know someplace in the world. And I've made only one call at this point because it's new, but I made one call to a pastor in the Philippines, and he was so excited about getting with somebody who's even on another island in the Philippines, but he knows the language, he has the capability, he has the resources that he can really reach out to this pastor. And so that's kind of our approach right now while we're in the process of building an organization that will be big enough that we can actually have the area offices across the world and the regional offices here in the United States, et cetera. Mm. So that's kind of our approach.
Mm. And you're relying on a pastor-to-pastor model?
Somewhat. I think Ron should respond to this.
Yes, somewhat, but also in the group context from time to time.
Oh, yeah. And I got to tell you, Ron, I was so struck by your concern for pastors' wives. Am I correct in assuming that your wife, Rodetta, kind of leads the charge there with the women?
She sure does. Absolutely. She is a co-laborer in this ministry, and you know, there just needs to be a greater sensitivity to our wives in ministry, because again, so many times they suffer in silence, you know, and pastors think they have no place to turn. Well, the wife has even less place to turn. Mm. So many times.
Well, this is an issue that strikes close to my heart, not just because I've been a pastor, but because I'm well aware that we've got a great many pastors who are members of the Samson Society around the country. Some of them have banded together to form small groups just of pastors where they can feel a little bit safer than in a group that might also contain lay people. And I'm just so encouraged by the work that you all are doing. How can our listeners reach Care for Pastors if they'd like to follow up with you?
They can. Our website is just careforpastors.org, or they can call us at area code 352-728-8179. But everything's on our website. They can schedule an appointment on the website. We'll follow up with them with a phone call. We're here to serve, and that website is just probably the greatest way that they can contact us.
All right. Well, Lord bless you.
Talking about the, just real quickly, if I may, Nate, talking about the website. Currently, if you're on the website, one of the pastors who have had occasion to go through Care for Pastors and have been healed and moved into back into ministry is currently doing a serial blog on the website. Weekly, he gives more of his story. That's really a very interesting review of an actual person who has actually been through a Care for Pastors healing process. So your listeners may be well served to go to the website and catch up on that blog, which I think is in its fourth week now, and follow that, because I think it'll be very enlightening for them.
Well, that's great. So all those pirate monks out there, the place to go is careforpastors.org. And we've been talking with Ron and Dick and Don of that great organization. Thank you for giving us some of your time, and we'll be praying for you guys and for Rodetta as well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Lord bless. Bye. But you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil. Serve somebody. Maybe a rock and roll addict dancing on the stage. Money, drugs at your command. Women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are. You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, Aaron, that was something. From the sound of it, you'd think that there's a lot of pastors out there who hate their jobs.
Wow. I'm glad that wasn't a question. I'd have to respond.
Do you think, of course, if it's true, pastors are not the only people in the world to hate their jobs, certainly. And not all pastors do hate their jobs. Anybody can feel trapped in a vocation. But it seems as though the plight of the pastor is unique. Would you agree?
Well, having only been in full-time ministry since the week I turned 20, I don't know how unique it is, except from what I viewed from inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that pastors feel like they are, the term that they used was supernaturally called, the fact that you feel obligated to God to follow through and do a good work.
Yeah.
It's not like, yeah, I chose to be an accountant. Wow, this is really, this isn't who I am. I'm going to go try working at In-N-Out Burger, whatever.
Yeah.
It's bigger. It's like you failed God when you fail. And I know, geez, I don't know how many times in my life and every other pastor friend I know that we've thought about quitting, because it's very hard.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of misunderstanding from the people we serve.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't believe that thing about the adding some stripes to him. I'm serious about giving me that guy's address. I'm going to go help him in his understanding.
Well, I'll tell you when this kind of dawned on me. I mean, I knew that I was miserable for most of my years in ministry. But this, just a few years ago, I was speaking at a men's conference, coincidentally in Florida. After the big plenary session, we broke the room into small groups and had guys share. Well, I had the feeling that the men there were not going to get transparent as I wanted them to be if they were in a group with their pastor. So really, out of concern for the lay guys, mm-hmm. I said, all the pastors come with me. And I'm thinking I'm real smart, right? So I'm making it safe for the lay people. Well, we get these pastors together in a circle, and we give them a chance to be transparent. And for some reason, in that room at that time, these guys felt that it was safe to tell the truth. And I got the sense as we went around the room that on that day there wasn't a man in the room who wouldn't have seriously considered leaving the ministry if he had another option. And they were voicing their disappointment and their frustration and their pain and their feeling of failure. And the one quote that stuck out to me that I remember to this day was one guy who said, "I feel as though as a pastor, the door to repentance is closed to me."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why this is important, you know, realizing those of you who are out there who aren't pastors and you're thinking, geez, why are you inflicting me with a whole podcast on pastors? Well, because I'm hoping you're in a local church and you're part of the problem. You're not the whole problem, but you're part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And it might not be totally your fault because we've all been sold this bill of goods that is crap. You need to understand how to serve your pastor. Your pastor is supposed to be a member of your church. He's using his gifts within that local body. But that's not the way we see it. We don't see it that way as pastors usually, mm-hmm. and the people in the congregation don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Being the leader of a church is somehow separate from being one of the church.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Whereas Ephesians 4 says that God's given these gifts to some, to the apostles, right. the prophets, the evangelists, the teachers. They are given that gift to equip the rest of the saints to do what they're gifted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all in this together. We're all commanded to use our gifts. It's just the pastors, probably because we get paid to do it, are the only ones that anyone actually expects to follow through on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if pastors are not a part of their church, then what you said, the door for repentance is closed. It's not the same as for everybody else.
Yeah.
Why? Because you're paid for it.
Yeah.
You're paid to be better than everybody else.
You know, I had that feeling those years that I was in ministry that was the string that was attached to the check.
Mm.
They were paying me to have it together. Mm-hmm. And I felt at times that I could pull it together. I could just never keep it together.
Yeah.
And as the years passed and my life unraveled more, you know, the stress. Yeah, he talks about, Ron talked about having this place where a pastor and his wife could come for a respite.
Mm-hmm.
Allie and I actually decided to leave the ministry after a respite weekend. Mm. We got away from the church. We got away from people. Somebody was watching our kids. We had 48 hours to breathe and think and talk about what was really going on. And there in that time of just clarity, when the whistle had been blown and we just had, you know, we just realized we couldn't do it anymore.
So what would have made a difference for you during those 5 years in ministry? What could the lay people you were serving have done to serve you back and create a different experience? Now, I know it was totally in part you. It wasn't just them.
Yeah, we were doing this crazy dance where they wanted me to be the hero, and I desperately wanted to be the hero. I lived with a lot of self-hatred and condemnation because of my private knowledge of the scope of my failure. But I still didn't want to give up the dance. What would have made the difference? if I had believed that there was somebody I could talk to about my accelerating addiction, where I could have gotten help, therapy, before it really intensified and metastasized to the degree it did, that very well might have saved the ministry for me. Now, let me just say that I don't have a lot of regret over leaving.
Right.
I had 10 dark years, 12 dark years after leaving, and then God has redeemed my ministry and given me another way to minister. I found my way back into the ministry without being in the professional ministry. It would have been... I really wish that I could have spent those 12 years in, you know, present in my own life and in ministry rather than off wandering in the wilderness as I chose to do. If I had had a place, something like Care to Pastors, if I could have talked with a peer who I fully trusted wouldn't drop the hammer on me. You know, it's crazy. I was in kind of relationship with some other pastors, but I was even careful there. And I sensed that they were very careful with me.
Mm-hmm.
We talked in code, and there were classifications of behavior that I never got close to. And I did a lot of backslapping, handshaking, you know, God bless you kind of things, and never allowed those relationships to go very deep. Peer relationships would have made a difference. A revised expectation of my role as a pastor would have made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. How about you? Now, I'm looking at you, Aaron. Our listeners don't know our relative ages. I'm 54. You are?
34.
So, wow.
But you got to remember, I got married when I was 19, went to full-time ministry at 20, so I'm exhausted. Let's not minimize that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was struck by, Dick's diagnosis of the problem, and that we're putting pastors into these leadership situations, mm-hmm. and we give them absolutely no leadership training. All of their professional training is, exegetical and hermeneutical and, all that kind of stuff. But they don't know.
You just impressed our whole listening audience. Those are some big words. That was awesome.
Yeah, good. I learned those at Princeton.
That was awesome, egetical.
Yeah. but still, completely, just lost in the world of business and leadership when I first entered the ministry.
Right.
Good Lord.
Was that your experience?
Yeah, I mean the first ministry job I had the week I turned 20 was with Child Evangelism Fellowship, and some of the listeners might know it's an international ministry,
mm-hmm.
and I was supposed to be an area director, but within a year I became the executive director, and I couldn't even balance my checkbook, and I was in charge of the whole budget for the third biggest chapter in California.
Yeah.
And that's running a summer camp with staff, with menus, with budgets, running everything else that happens throughout the year. So I definitely felt, it was hard. I had mm-hmm. to figure it out.
Yeah.
But to add to this, I feel like I got to, my first local pastor job was with a guy named Tom Morris, who I still work with after 13 years together,
mm-hmm.
and he's very good at the administrative part of things,
yeah.
and he was very gracious in really letting me be his partner in that, so I had the best situation mm-hmm. possible. But there's also a shift that church in the past has been business-like. It's been hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like administrating a business with your staff, with your budgets, all of that. And there is a shift in the country right now, which in some ways makes it even more complicated. Because before, you could just set up a hierarchical leadership. You could be the lord of your realm.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you could pull it off on paper and administrate it, you could make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our culture is moving towards a much more relational model, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of baby boomers who are finding out that their business model of doing church is not working well. In fact, if we look at statistically, it's failing. Mm-hmm. There's less and less people going to church every year. But there are all these churches that are moving towards a more relational model that are growing. Well, that means that we're going to have to learn as pastors how to be leaders in the fullness of our calling and our gifting while still allowing other people to walk with us. One of our pastor pirates in San Luis calls it leading from the middle instead of leading from the front. And I think that's a brilliant way to say it. But that's going to take even more training to train someone to lead from the middle. And just learning how to exegete the book of 3 John and do grammatical analysis in the Greek, that's not going to help you at all to understand this. Now, it's important, but it's not the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I love this ministry that's helping pastors that are realizing that they weren't equipped and trying to help them get equipped. However, somebody's got to go to the seminaries. I mean, these are very educated people that run seminaries, so I'm not sure how they missed the fact that they're not actually educating pastors to succeed.
Yeah.
The statistically, the people that they're putting out in the ministry are failing in their family lives, that they're being prepared in such a way that they're wrecking their marriages, their kids' lives, churches. Someone's got to let the seminaries know that they need to do better, because I hold them responsible in part. How can I not? These are the people that send people out feeling like they're ready to be a pastor, only to get run over and ground through the chipper and shot out into the secular workforce completely confused.
So let me ask you, Aaron. So would you say that budget management, leadership training, business skills of any sort, are the things that are lacking with the graduates from seminary? So they have all the other aspects, but those three things and others would benefit them if they were to learn those at seminary?
They need to know at least the basics of those for sure. And that's not taught at seminary that I'm aware of. And I'm sure someone can point to some class. I mean, I had a business administration class at the Christian school I went to. It was not helpful for what I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, you don't have to be the best at those things. I mean, track with me on this.
Yeah.
Here I go. Ready?
Yep.
If you want to be the lord of your realm, you have to be an expert at all of those. If you want to run the church, if you want to be the king and in charge of everything, then you better be amazing at budgets, at administrating, all of that.
Right.
If you want to lead from the middle, relationally, be one of your church, you don't have to be the best at that.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have an awareness of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can actually go to the people in the church and say, hey, man, you're good at this budgeting. Will you come alongside and be my friend? Will you walk with me and run this? And we're going to trust each other, and we're going to build leadership where we can trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be that person unless you fall into the, let's just call it the God version of church, where we make the pastor essentially God.
God, right.
Yeah.
And then he lets us know that he's in touch with God,
right.
And he'll let us know what God's saying.
Yeah.
It's incredibly sacerdotal for being evangelical. Mm-hmm. Explain that. I wanted to use my big word.
Very, very good.
That was good.
I didn't even go to Harvard.
Aaron's scores.
Princeton.
Aaron's scores on the big word contest today.
No, I got to come up with a big word. Okay.
And I agree that pastors need training at the seminary level on the practical business aspects
day-to-day
of running a church.
Yeah. Yeah,
and administrative stuff,
right.
Leadership, all that kind of stuff. I cannot get away from that other huge need, though, which is the need for honest daily relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's the isolation as much as ignorance that kills pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm so thrilled to know that Covenant Seminary is going to a cohort model of teaching quite shortly.
A cohort?
Cohort model, which means when you show up as a freshman at Covenant Seminary, you'll be assigned to a cohort. You will be with a group of guys. And you
Sorry,
will
all I can think is it was a cohort of Roman soldiers that came for Jesus.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're going to a cohort model seems wrong at every level to me. But
it is so right.
I want to dislodge my mind from that. Go on.
It is so right. They'll take the courses together, study together, in some respects be graded together. They'll get into each other's lives. And in today's connected world, it's quite possible that those relationships they form in seminary, they'll be able to maintain for a lifetime.
They'll last, yeah.
Yeah.
How wonderful that would have been.
That's amazing. Yeah, with this connected world, they can be Skyping each other, getting groups. That's yay for it's Covenant Seminary.
You kind of a Samson thing.
Community.
Let's live life together, including our ministry, together. Well, I think that's all we got time for today, guys. Kind of an odd, but I think still interesting podcast this week.
Well, as long as you think it's interesting. Why don't you tell them where they can write to us to ask us any questions, because we love to field questions.
Right, or they could give us their frank assessment of the usefulness of today's podcast. And if they especially hated it, they could suggest other topics. You can do that, you know, if you'll write to us at letters@samsonsociety.org. You can also hit either me, Aaron, or Mondo up on the samsonsociety.org website. We are also subscribers to the Facebook. You can hit us there. Mm-hmm. Or you can put pen to paper, and you can send us via U.S. Postal Service delivery.
Yeah.
You can write to us at P.O. Box
224 in Franklin, Tennessee 37065.
Well, until next week, here's the gang, Nate, Aaron, and Mondo, along with Aaron's dad. We'll see you next week here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.